Next, we'll hear a little-known story of one of the nation's most famous cities. The city is Washington, D.C. A chain of violent events took place here in 1835.
Few of the city's buildings from that time remain, but you can still sense what it was like if you sit in a park by the White House, as we did with the writer Jefferson Morley.
It had been landscaped, and there were paths just like this. There were a lot of residences on either side, but the White House was very much as it is today.
We're looking over here at the White House. We can just see bits of it through the trees, and that facade was just as it was, the north front of the White House.
Yeah, in the summer of 1835, it was a little shabby because they were constructing a new driveway, and there was sort of workmen's materials all over the place, and people thought that was a little not quite appropriate, but that's the way it was for a year or two.
The look was appropriate in a way because American democracy was very much under construction in the 1830s. Morley examines a tale of America's evolving society in his new book, Snowstorm in August. And you tell a story that effectively begins in this square and goes to some of the darker corners of this city and some of the darker corners of its history. What happened here in 1835?
On August 4th, 1835, there was a young man loitering here with a friend. He was 19 years old, a black kid. His name was John Arthur Bowen. He was a servant. He was the property of a woman named Anna Maria Thornton.
A slave?
Yes, he was a slave. And they lived over on 13th and F Streets. And so on the evening of August 4th, 1835, he had come from a meeting of what they call the Talking Society. It was called the Philomathian, and it was run by a school teacher. And he would gather the young black men who were enslaved, and he would teach them, you know, here's how to get your freedom. You know, learn to read and write. Don't drink. You know, read these abolitionist newspapers. And so it was a little talking group to try and build the morale and the education of these young black men.
This was not the kind of activity that made white people comfortable. A Virginia slave revolt a few years earlier had spurred some Americans to call for slavery's abolition and also infuriated slave owners. So it was a dangerous environment for a young black man to leave a political meeting and go out drinking in this park beside the White House.
So he's hanging out here, and he's probably talking with his friend about, you know, how do you get your freedom? And they're drinking, and he walks home over to 13th and F. He goes in the back door, and he's pretty drunk at this point.
This is just a few blocks away from here now, okay?
He picks up an axe, and he goes upstairs from the basement where he's entered, and on the first floor is where his mother sleeps in the same room with Mrs. Thornton, the woman who owns him. And at about 1 o'clock in the morning, he opens the door to their room and walks in. And his mother and Mrs. Thornton wake up to the sight of this young man standing in the door with an axe in his hand. He's totally inebriated, and he doesn't do anything. Mrs. Thornton screams, runs out to the front door, and starts shouting for her neighbors. And this story starts to spread that Mrs. Thornton has been attacked in her bedroom by a slave with an axe.
Just to be clear, even though he was drunk and holding an axe, no one was actually attacked, no one was actually injured.
No, and he was arrested then for attempted murder.
Because the story had spread to the law enforcement officials who just bought it.
Right. And because of this ferment and all of these, you know, this anti-slavery agitation, the whites were very fearful. A lot of whites thought that Arthur attacking his mistress was the beginning of a slave rebellion. And so this crowd gathers, a huge crowd of whites gathers and goes to the jail in Judiciary Square and tries to lynch Arthur.
Was part of this not only that it was a confrontation between master and slave, and not only black and white, but black man and white woman?
Oh, yes, and this added immensely to the shocking quality of this story. But Mrs. Thornton, she's very devoted to her servant, who's Arthur's mother, and once she got over her shock, she told people, he did not mean to hurt me. And nobody wanted to hear that. Least of all, the district attorney, Francis Scott Key.
Francis Scott Key.
Yes.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light?
Yes, the man who wrote the Star-Spangled Banner in 1814 was in 1835 a prominent lawyer. He'd become the Capitol's top law enforcement official under President Andrew Jackson. And he was a central figure in the story as told by Jefferson Morley.
In a lot of ways, he was really the prototype of the modern Washington lawyer lobbyist. He had a nice house in Georgetown. He had nice neckties. He had a wine cellar. He had clients who paid big retainers. He was a political operator, and he used his fame and his law practice for political connections and to become politically involved for his hero, Andrew Jackson. And Andrew Jackson rewarded his loyalty by appointing him to be the district attorney for the city of Washington. So that is how Francis Scott Key came to prosecute Arthur Bowen.
So this explosive case lands in his lap.
Yes, and when this type of racially charged incident erupted, Key wanted to prove right away that he was in control and that there was no threat to the slave order in Washington.
Even as the prosecutor, Francis Scott Key, is going about prosecuting this man, whom even the supposed victim doesn't seem to think is guilty of anything, what's happening in the streets of Washington?
Well, there's fear of another insurrection. There's resentment of the abolitionists. And the mob just goes wild. And they just take off across the city. And the mob just destroyed everything. The black schools, the black churches, the homes of the free blacks. So they kind of ran wild. And the law enforcement was just nowhere to be seen. There was no protection whatsoever. And so this went on for a couple of nights. And Washington woke up to, I mean, shock is hardly the word. Washington had not been trashed that way since the British invaded in 1814, 21 years before. But this wasn't a foreign army that did the damage. This was Americans.
We're in a city that's changed so much. We're in one of the few locations where you can still see some of the buildings that were around in 1835. And we're in a country, of course, that has changed enormously. But is there something about this story that's still in the American DNA?
Absolutely. While technology, clothes, and all of that change, other things are very much the same. You know, there were arguments about, you know, who could be a citizen. You know, we argue about illegal immigration today. So the political debates about free speech, about property rights, about citizenship rights, those are actually still with us. And in fact, this is really when the formative moment of American politics really comes about. And you have this dynamic that we still have with us today. The red and the blue, right? The red states are conservative, the blue states are liberal. A lot was the same.
Jefferson Morley is the author of Snowstorm in August. Thanks for coming out to Lafayette Square here to talk with us about it.
Thanks.
By the way, the slave who was put on trial for attempted murder was convicted and sentenced to death, although he was ultimately pardoned by President Andrew Jackson. You can see the newspaper ad for his capture, as well as sketches of what Washington, D.C. looked like in 1835 at npr.org. This is NPR News.